My name is Joel Oinas. I'm one of the pastors. I'm also a carpenter here in the village. And when we planned the, when I was planning Bible studies, I planned two for last week and two for this week. How many people are here from last week? Nobody. How many from this week, huh? How many? Let me rephrase that question. How many people have been to at least three of the Bible studies this week with John or Marilyn? Huh? Okay, you all know what think. Two of them? Okay. Y'all have heard the term think with then, or you've been working on it for a while. I'll say a few things about that for you that haven't been to studies. Hey, what I had originally planned was a four-part series on the prophets. And we did two last week, and we're doing two this week. Now, because none of you were here last week, I don't feel any obligation to make it continuous. And because the other Bible studies of this week have dealt with the Bible as a think with rather than the Bible as something to look at, we're going to continue in that style. Let me describe to you just briefly what today will be like and what tomorrow will be like. There's still kind of a basic division between two times in the history of Israel. Today's time will be the time up until the destruction of Jerusalem and the end of Judah as a nation, when the nation of Israel was no more. There were prophets that had a lot to say about that particular situation. Okay, so today we'll be talking about that. Tomorrow, the prophets and the time after the destruction, the time in the exile in Babylonia. The prophets still continued to speak, and the people heard different things. Okay. Now we're going to continue, as I said, the idea that the Bible, rather than being a place to look at things and words about things, the Bible, there is a biblical think with, a way of looking at things, a pair of biblical glasses one wears that colors everything you see. Monday's session was on corporateness as a think with. And John's point in that was that the Hebrews thought not in terms of individualism and interior salvation of soul for one person and then another in the church, or the God's people were a combination of individuals all working out their own salvation, but that somehow the people were bound together in an identity in which nobody could be really separated from the other. That's the second session on sufficiency had to do with the lifestyle of the people of Israel. That there was a certain way of, I think the phrase used was, enough was enough. Satiation and overabundance was not a blessing but a curse. Having just enough and being able to share to produce the Hebrew shalom, the peace and the harmony among the whole community, was the way that the people of God were asked to live. I wasn't here for Marilyn's sessions. If she talked about judgment as a think with, she talked about, I'm guessing,
justice.
About justice, and that judgment and mercy were both included in the preaching of justice. That those people in positions of power, right, heard judgment. Those people in the position of powerlessness heard mercy and good news, but they were both the same kind of preaching. Okay. Now, all those think-withs are important in the think-with of the prophet. And the think-with of the prophet and the prophets we're going to talk about is covenant. Now, that word is a kind of an ancient word, a Bible word. Does it ring any bells? A covenant. What kind of images does it?
Contract.
An agreement.
Promise.
Say some more. Those so far have been one word answers.
Partnership.
Kind of exchange between two parties, yeah.
Well, a bunch of people get together and make peace. Making peace.
Making peace.
Have a way of working together.
All right. The way to sort out agreements and establish a way to live together without a lot of conflict.
Yeah.
Responsibility.
Okay, responsibility. You want to say more?
Like duty, maybe?
Duty, obligation. All right. Okay, like I said, this the idea of covenant, and we've talked about, we mentioned a lot of words that are associated with that, was the prophets think with. And the two partners in the covenant were Yahweh, our God, and God's people, Israel. And in this case, it's now called, the people of Israel called Judah, because the northern kingdom for a while was called Israel, and it was destroyed 100 years before this. So God's people, Judah, Jerusalem, the two partners in the covenant. Now, what we're going to try to do is to see with covenant eyes, just like you've done the other Bible study sessions, is to put on covenant glasses and see everything in terms of that covenant, okay? We'll have to leave some of our own think-withs behind. One of the toughest ones to leave behind, well, we'll talk about those in a second. Let's first talk about covenant as a think-with. What kind of assumptions one makes when you look at any situation with a covenant idea in your head? All mentioned it was a relationship, Yahweh and Yahweh's people. God will act this way. Not only is the relationship established, but certain obligations and responsibilities are established. God will act this way, and we will act this way. Sort of the form the covenant took. Can you think of the event that was that began the covenant? What kind of events in the history of Israel do you think about when you think about covenant?
Abraham.
And Abraham, God made a covenant with Abraham, right? That, do you want to say more about that? No? Anybody else?
Well, he was out looking at the stars one night. God said that he'd make his people like the stars.
Okay.
His descendants.
A great nation. That was a promise. Okay.
What? Blessed to be a blessing.
All right. Say more about that. What does that mean to you? Blessed to be a blessing.
Well, God was going to watch over him through the wilderness and all, and he to be a blessing, and all his descendants were to be part of God's kingdom.
Okay, and that blessing meant that through it, what the words go, and through you, all the nations of the world will be blessed. Right. Okay, that's a covenant. We'll call that Abraham's covenant. Okay, there are others in there. When the people left the Egypt, came into the wilderness, they went to a mountain, and there it was that the big covenant was made. Okay. Moses was there, and it was on Mount Sinai. And you remember parts of that covenant? This has probably got more details about that covenant than anyone. There were... Say that?
The Ten Commandments.
Yeah, the Ten Commandments. The written laws. Anybody ever waded through all the writings of Exodus and Leviticus? All the little statutes and commandments that God includes there. Some of them have to do with ritual cleanness, you know, what kind of food you can eat, what kind of sicknesses and illnesses should be quarantined. There were also a covenant about how you would behave, what kind of lifestyle you'd live. There was attention paid to the people that were powerless. The widow, who essentially had no rights in the society of Israel. The orphan, who also had no rights. And the sojourner, the alien, meaning one person outside this group identified as God's people. Okay, and then also there were provisions about how the people of God would take care of their economic life. You know, John mentioned Monday about the Jubilee year, that there were certain times of the year. There was a Sabbath once every 6 days in which all your servants rested. The cows and the sheep and the animals you had working rested, and you rested too, to say that the world would go on without your labor, and that God would take care of the people. It was a way to remember that you were not God. Same thing happened in the Jubilee year. Once every 50 years, debts would be released, people would be released from prison, the land would lie fallow. All this was a way to govern the lifestyle of God's people, and to say that this was a way to practice this idea and found in Abraham of being a blessing, that God's people would behave in a different sort of way. Okay, and then there were in the covenant at Sinai talk about how you worshipped. God was called a jealous God. God didn't want any sort of religious pluralism. Well, and one of the reasons for that is that religion was not something separated from the lifestyle of people and the government of people. If you adopted the gods of another land, you also behaved like the people of another land, and in ways that in which you lost your identity as God's people. And that was the big covenant. Above all, the covenant always implied that the covenant might be broken. There was always the possibility in this covenant that if you do not obey the statutes and commandments that I, and if you follow after other gods, then that you will bring upon yourself the consequences of that action. It was some way always recognized as an obligation to each other, not in the same way the Abraham covenant was. It was just kind of a promise to Abraham. Abraham had to do very little. Matter of fact, Abraham didn't even ask for it. Okay, two other covenants that come along are the covenant with King David. Do you recall any what that was about?
Well, that his lineage would always be king.
Okay.
That a king of Judah would always come from his lineage.
Okay, David would always have one of his descendants on the throne of Judah. Okay. And the fourth covenant, there might be more, but the fourth main one would be the covenant with Jerusalem. This was the place where there was a temple. And because God's temple was there and God spoke from Zion, from the temple, from Jerusalem, Jerusalem would always be where God's name lived and where God dwelt. Okay, now, make all those your think with. Okay? If you look at things from that perspective, you're going to be looking at things the way the prophets looked at things. Okay? All right. They saw God's people as having a relationship with God, and that God's people would look like this. God's people behaved in a certain way. God's people had an identity. And the prophets spoke, received a call, and felt this irresistible urge to talk to the people of God because they saw that what the people, the lifestyle of the people, was not in agreement with their understanding of the covenant. The people had a different think with, and this is you might describe, as long as we're talking about think withs, that it was a battle of think withs. The prophets understood the covenant one way; they saw with green glasses, covenant glasses, and the people saw with blue, and they didn't get along because of their different conceptions. And to tie this in with the way the two Bible studies are divided, the prophets always saw things the same. I mean, they saw the covenant; they saw what the people of God should look like. And the prophets were not they were not in the kind of theological trouble when the nation of Israel was destroyed by Babylon. The people's think-with was wiped away. They said, what's happened to the covenant? Is it broken? And the prophet says, no. The covenant is the same. Judgment and mercy are part of speaking about the covenant to God's people. Okay. Give me a little feedback on how you're doing having covenant as a think with. Huh?
You mean that they were just getting the curses of the covenant instead of the blessings, because they had gone along with certain things in the covenant that incurred curses and stuff?
To speak the covenant to covenant breakers is to speak judgment to them, right? And so, yeah, that's what was going on. That's what we're going to be talking about today in the last days of Jerusalem. I'm just going to bring up a couple things, and you respond to them. One way, when we talk about the covenant with Israel, one thing that sometimes is said is that, well, God was different back then. That God was a God that was angry with his people all the time. God and we of a different covenant, a new covenant, have a God of love. What do you make of that? I mean, is that a legitimate think with? Okay. Okay. It is fairly common nowadays to look at the covenant that way. But I'd agree with you that God is not different. to the people of Israel and to we who claim to be partakers of the new covenant.
Okay. Another one is that
they deserved it more than we did. That they really screwed up. And we haven't done that yet. Okay, now I take it from the laughter that that's not a legitimate think with either, huh? So we're really looking, when we get a when we've got this prophetic think with of the covenant, we're getting a think with that can look at our own covenant too. And we'll do that toward the end of the hour here. Okay. Okay. So when we look at law as a negative thing, it might be a modern think with, and Jews did not look at law that way.
Okay. Well, Paul was looking at the law as bringing death.
Think about that one, too.
Covenant, isn't that the regular law? They had bylaws and a few things like that, like we have now. We have a contract. Do they have a contract?
It was never like a legal document. And you'll hear it when we talk about the prophets. It was never something that you just, you know, presented a summons to someone or you sent a letter from your lawyer. God would plead and argue with his people that he would complain about them. You know, it was more like father and son or mother and daughter. You know, there are certain, you can look at it as a contract in a way. It's a little better to say covenant because that makes it a little more humane. But the way that God and Israel behaved and the way God talked to Israel was always a little more like a family relationship than a cold legal contract. Paul, in talking about the law as death, I'm not sure. I can't remember if he says it is death or if it brings awareness of sin.
Okay.
Okay. He would. Let me just think about that one for a while, and maybe we can talk. Get back to it. Okay. Good question. All right, for about 10 or 15 minutes, I'll do a little more talking. And I'll talk first of all about the popular idea covenant that was going on that the prophets battled against. And what the prophets said about that popular idea covenant. Okay. Like any sort of think with today, any sort of think with theology, assumptions you make, they can be popularized in our day. The idea that God loves and makes covenant with his people has sometimes been trivialized and popularized to say that God helps those who help themselves. There are ways in which the covenant can be changed a little bit. And I was out of the village yesterday and saw a big, huge picture of the Crystal Cathedral and was reminded of the fact that never is Jesus talked about. And I looked at there was never a cross in the picture. It claims to be a Christian church, but the message is that God wants you to be successful. Right? It's a popularized theology. It may not and probably is not an accurate reflection of Jesus who suffered and died and told us we would all carry and live under the cross. Okay. The same thing happened to the covenant. And seems like things are popularized into a much more pleasant and palatable style. The covenant was reduced more or less to a one-sided promise. That it wasn't so much that we had a relationship of God will do this and we will be his people and we will look and act like this. It became sort of a promise of God will do this. God will make us a great nation. And it was thinking along those lines that Israel decided they wanted to be like other nations and have a king. God was not happy with that. God was their king, and that was not part of their identity. So Saul was anointed king. David became king. Solomon became king. The king, after Solomon, the kingdom split in half. They continued this idea that they would be a great nation through this institutionalized kingship. Okay? There arose an idea that Zion, Jerusalem, was an unconditional promise that God would always live in Jerusalem. Name would dwell there. The Ark of the Covenant was there. David brought it in. And because it was the city of David and God loved David, the city would always be there too. the doings of God's people, the obligations of the covenant, were reduced to church attendance. Or it wasn't church. It was doing the right thing at the temple, bringing the appropriate sacrifices at the right time of year. Whatever was happening in the temple was the obligation of God's people. And they kind of forgot that God insisted that his people be uncompromising with their ethics and their lifestyle. They retained their identity as God's people, but not the indelible markings, not the markings of behavior and lifestyle. There was originally conceived sort of an egalitarian society. It wasn't long before under kingship there was a certain class that became privileged. The priests that agreed with the king's policy were, of course, the more successful priests. There were a group of princes and rulers and magistrates that were able to make their lifestyle better. There was taxation that began under Solomon. There was conscription. And all of a sudden, we had in very many ways, a modern society that had classes, had privileged classes, oppressed classes, had all the institutions of government, taxation, conscription, a large standing army. And there was a cultural pluralism. It was the idea that other countries had things to offer, that there were many things about the Canaanites that seemed to operate really well. There were many things about the Philistines, the Phoenicians, that seemed to be advantageous for the blooming state of Israel. And so they adopted that. And that was all identified as idolatry. Idolatry wasn't just worshiping a god of stone. Idolatry was taking on the cultural markings of another kind of people and abandoning your uniqueness as God's people. But it was still all seen that this was part of the covenant. God was making us a great nation. All we had to do was perform proper temple worship and things would go all right. When the northern kingdom was destroyed, and Isaiah was the prophet in the south, Isaiah was saying, don't practice statehood, don't make alliances with Egypt or with Phoenicia or with Edom. God will fight for you. God will be your God and lead you through the conflict that's now at hand. The northern kingdom was destroyed, and in fact, it did happen in Judah, as Isaiah had said, that Judah exists, you know, was the last little country there that was unconquered by the Syrians. Well, what happened is that changed the idea of the covenant. All of a sudden, they said, we have the temple. That's why the northern kingdom was destroyed. They had three temples. They had, you know, they had all sorts of temples. And we have Jerusalem. We have Zion. That's why we were saved. They also said, well, they didn't have a Davidic king, and they didn't. We have David's king. And where there was assassinations and usurping of the throne and political coups in the north, there was always a descendant of David on the throne in the south. And so all it did in the popular mind was reinforce the idea that God will never let anything bad happen to us. And so that's the situation. This society where the people have forgotten their covenant obligations, they're practicing a statehood that is out of sync with the covenant relationship, that God is not king over them, but God is sort of a cabinet member that the king dictates to until, you know, and it becomes sort of a managed religion.
Weren't they sort of remembering God's part of the bargain?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Remembering God's part of the bargain, his promises, and not their own. Yeah. Okay, that's kind of a portrait of the popular idea of the covenant. That's where the situation where Jeremiah stepped into it. Any comments on that? Anything that kind of clicks with you as people seeing with the prophet's eyes? What do you think is going to happen? What?
Perhaps Jeremiah has to remind them they're part of the bargain.
Okay.
Relative to the an earlier question of whether they sort of signed on the dotted line. they really did more than that early, didn't they? They exchanged a drop of one another's blood and swallowed it as a token of an agreement or a covenant. Later, this was replaced by a hand clasp, and then they also built pillars of stone as a mark of an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And then salt, the token of salt, I think, is very, very, very serious one. Because if you sat down, made agreement, and exchanged, they ate something salty together, because salt has great significance, isn't it? As a preservative, it also refers to the eternal covenant. And salt is also, doesn't refer to the Torah. I mean, when you speak of salt, you think of the Torah. To a Jew, salt is Torah. It can refer to Torah. So this was it was probably in some ways better than signing on the dotted line. It was serious business.
Okay. Okay. Well, the stage is set. The two prophets that, maybe I'll just read about 10 verses from one and 10 from the other. The two prophets that seem, that are burdened with the responsibility of speaking to the people who have misunderstood covenant, whose think-widths are all screwed up, are Jeremiah and Ezekiel. I'll just read a little bit from Jeremiah, 14 verses in chapter 7. And with these think-widths, with the idea of Zion as part of God's promise, as David, the Sinaitic covenant and the Exodus from Egypt, and the covenant with Abraham to be a blessing, just kind of follow along or listen along and see if you can recognize what the people might have heard and what Jeremiah was saying. Jeremiah 7, 1 through 14. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord: stand in the gate of the Lord's house, there's the temple, and proclaim there this word and say, hear the word of the Lord, all you men of Judah who enter these gates to worship the Lord. There is covenant obligation as only church attendance. Speaking to the people coming into church. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will let you dwell in this place. Promise of the land. Don't trust in these deceptive words. This is the temple of the Lord. This is the temple of the Lord. This is the temple of the Lord. It's the state theology that God would never allow the temple to be destroyed. For if you truly amend your ways and your doings, if you truly execute justice one with another, if you do not forget these covenant obligations, oppress the alien, the fatherless, or the widow, or shed innocent blood in this place, if you do not go after other gods to your own hurt, then I will let you dwell in this place, in the land that I gave of old to your fathers forever. Behold, you trust in deceptive words to no avail. And then he kind of paraphrases the Ten Commandments. He says, will you steal, murder, commit adultery, swear falsely, burn incense to Baal, and go after other gods that you have not known, and then come and stand before me in this house which is called my name and say, we are delivered, only to go on doing all these abominations. He's really confronting their think-with, the idea that just, you know, temple worship is our part of the bargain. He talks about all the covenantal obligations, social obligations as well, as worship. Has this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes? Who said that? Who quoted that?
Jesus.
The same temple, I mean, the temple on the same spot.